It's always a pleasure when we here at Robinhood Radio get to speak to Ralph Nader, of course, our neighbor up in Winsted. Ralph has the Tort Museum. Of course, you probably know Ralph from a lot of other things other than the Tort Museum. One of the most well-known political activists in this country, if not the world. He's an author, a former presidential candidate, and of course, he loves his hometown, and in his own hometown, he started a Tort Museum. Ralph, nice to speak to you today.
Likewise. Thank you, Marshall.
So now the Tort Museum is open again as of today, I understand.
Yes, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, between 1 and 5 p.m. in the afternoon, it's open. You know, like a lot of museums that close during the winter, and of course with the COVID, there's another reason to close during the winter. But we're open, and it's a great educational experience for the family. I mean, everybody should know what the law of wrongful injury is. I mean, because anybody can be in a car crash or take a bad pharmaceutical or ingest a toxic pollution or end up in a hospital that isn't properly cared for. And it's surprising how many people come to the museum and they say, what's tort? Well, it's the French word for a wrongful injury.
And once again, the Tort Museum is open today and tomorrow and the 3rd from 1 to 5. And then after that, it's open like its normal schedule used to be on Sundays. Now, I understand from your email that, and this is the bad thing about social media, there was a social media rumor that the museum was closing, but you have come forward to debunk that once again.
Yeah, it was based on the COVID context, you know, that people shouldn't congregate in public places. And I don't know how the rumor got started, but when people go to this museum, it's the only law museum of any kind in the world. I found that out when it opened in 2015. It's quite remarkable, quite a commentary on my legal profession. There are 20 medical museums. There's 33 timber and lumber museums, but one law museum. And the exhibits are designed very brightly. I think the Lakeville Journal write-up said it was like a comic book pictures of the cases. Tobacco, the great tobacco litigation, the asbestos litigation, the Corvair, the Pinto, and a workplace machinery that's defective. And it shows the whole history over 200 years. Is when you go into the museum, there's a wall that shows the history from medieval England when they decided it was better to go to court and have a trial by jury than encourage revenge attacks if somebody's harmed. And so it's a very vibrant. We have someone who walked out of the museum after spending an hour, and he said, you know, I'm a museum fanatic. I've been to over 100 museums. He said, this is the first museum that respects my intelligence. And it's because it asks people questions about the case. It just says, well, what if involved going 200 miles an hour instead of 100 miles an hour or whatever? And they're just wonderful, bright cases and exhibits. There's even an enclave for dangerous toys. People have witnessed toys, a lot of them imports, unfortunately, from Asia that were chemistry sets that burned kids or loose pebbles that little kids would swallow. So there is an enclave. So it's for the whole family. It's for adults and children. It's one way to watch a child forget about short attention spans. They're really quite fascinated when they walk past all the exhibits.
Well, you think once people learn about tort law, they understand that tort law at its basic principle really opens up a lot of opportunities for the common public that they just are normally locked out of.
Yeah, of course. I mean, every year, millions of people in our country are wrongfully injured, from bullying to workplace disasters to airplanes like the Boeing to opiates, reckless dumping of contaminants that get into the food or into the water, lead into the water. These are wrongful injuries. And of course, highway crashes, drunk drivers, defective cars not recalled. And so that's why people really find it a wonderful experience, because it relates to their daily lives and what they read about and what they experience. And most museums don't do that. They don't relate to people's daily lives. They're an interesting experience, but they're not that relatable. And there's a gift store. People can come away with T-shirts and hats and buttons and wonderful posters for the great artwork. I mean, the artwork is really spectacular. And the posters are beautifully done in color. And then, of course, it has more books on famous tort cases and tort law than probably any bookstore in America, small as it is. It's right on Main Street, and there's plenty of free parking. Don't worry about it. Plenty of free parking. It's at 654 Main Street, just across from the road that goes up to Highland Lake.
We're speaking with Ralph Nader once again about the Tort Museum, the American Museum of Tort Law, reopening today, tomorrow, and the day after that, and then it'll be open on Sundays after that. When you speak about tort law, the interesting thing to me about tort law is, yes, there's the law where compensation is given to the person who was wronged, but the most important thing on top of that to me is that the disclosure of the information that goes public, so the public, not only the regulators and legislators, know about that particular problem.
Precisely. You hit the nail on the head, Marshall. The three purposes of tort law, when it's invoked, when someone is injured, goes to a contingent fee lawyer, they file the suit. If it isn't settled, they go to court, and trial by jury. It's open to the press and the public. Nothing secret about it in America. It has three purposes. One is to compensate the injury by the perpetrator of the harm. It could be a corporation. It could be a bully. It could be any number of things. The second is disclosure. And often the first disclosure of, say, millions of defective tires, or an ingredient that got into pharmaceutical that was harmful, comes from a single court case. It doesn't come from the regulators. It doesn't come from the legislators. They hear about it, and from time to time, they will establish mandatory safety standards, like in the tire safety area. And the third purpose of tort law is deterrence, like if you nail one company for doing a bad thing that a lot of other companies are doing, well, the other companies start getting a message to clean up their act. Problem is that so few people know about the law of torts. We're trying to get high school students to learn about it. We have a high school curriculum in working with social studies teachers. So few people know about it that about 95% of wrongful injuries never see a lawyer. They never see a legal complaint. And we want to expand the idea that you have these rights, they're the best in the world, and you don't have to pay a lawyer by the hour. It's contingent on whether the lawyer gets anything for you, and they take a percentage. But that's the safety net. That's the justice net for people. You know, when police are caught using illegal violence and they kill people, as we've seen in news reports all over the country in the last 2-3 years, and the prosecutors don't bring the case against the wayward police, well, you know what happens is that the family, the next of kin, can sue the city under the law of torts. And that's what happened when a young boy, 12 years old, in Cleveland was killed by a quick trigger police. The prosecutors didn't bring the case. The family brought the case, and they settled for several million dollars. Not that it replaces their child, but it generates deterrence to make sure the police are trained properly and managed properly. So a lot of crimes, corporate crimes, are also torts.
Well, I was going to say to me the corporate crimes are the ones where the tort law, yes, it gives some financial resource and relief to the people that are aggrieved, but it also forces that company or that corporation and other corporations to be more on their toes and to be more open, so they don't wind up paying out these millions of dollars.
Yeah, so a good example of that in the 1980s, there were lawsuits against reckless in operating rooms. I mean, they would even expose themselves to the anesthesia. And so there were some successful suits against hospitals, and the message spread throughout hospitals, and anesthesiology now is much safer for patients as a result of that. There's another case that people would be interested in. We also have a computer collection of cases. You can push some buttons, the case will come up. There is an apartment building in Washington, D.C., and a young woman was a tenant, and she came back to her apartment, and she was followed by somebody who got into the building and molested her. She sued, and the judge said that the apartment building owner did not take security precautions, careless about not locking doors, etc. And that sent a message to apartment owners all over the country that they can be sued if they don't secure their premises. So there's your point on deterrence.
Well, we're talking about the American Museum of Tort Law, located in Winsted, Connecticut, and it's located on Main Street, as a matter of fact, in Winsted, Connecticut. By the way, you can find out more on the web at tortmuseum.org. That's tortmuseum.org. Now, do you still offer virtual tours at the museum as well?
Yes. In fact, we just got a message from Singapore. Somebody saw it virtually, took the tour, and said, why don't we have a tour museum in Singapore? I said, be my guest. We need tour museums all over the world because people get wrongfully injured all over the world. Now, there are barriers. For example, there were veterans that were seriously hurt in with these burn pits, and they would in Iraq and elsewhere, and they would there's a contractor that did these burn pits, a big contractor from Texas, I think, and they just dumped everything and they put aviation fuel on it, and it's huge pollution, toxic. They didn't protect the soldiers over there. And so when they sued the company, the company said, oh, no, we're a contractor with the Department of Defense, so we share the sovereign immunity. You can't sue us. So there are a lot of barriers, a lot of insurance companies going to state legislatures over the recent decades, as we all know, to push what they call tort reform, what I call tort deform, to make it harder for wrongfully injured people to achieve justice, putting caps on pain and suffering in California, lifetime of pain and suffering cap of $250,000. That's been on the books for over 35 years. And that goes after the most serious patient rights, the people who are lost the wrong organ, for example, in surgery, or brain damage. And so we have to be very alert. And the more people use it, the more the justice they get, the more they're going to support it against the attacks by the corporations who don't want to be held accountable at all. In fact, Johnson & Johnson just did something. It was on public radio. Marshall, you probably heard it. They created a subsidiary, and they took 33,000 cases from women who claimed they came down with cancer because of talc powder produced by Johnson & Johnson. So they put the cases in this subsidiary and then went bankrupt so that the people could not have their day in court. They'd have to settle for a small sum if at best. Well, you see, that's what these corporations can do. They can escape justice. No human being can escape justice like that. They can't create a subsidiary and get out of it. And people think that's what more and more corporations are going to do unless the bankruptcy laws are reformed. And Senator Sanders, Senator Warren, and Senator Durbin are are pushing legislation to make sure that these corporations have to be held accountable.
Well, once again, folks, the American Museum of Tort Law opening today, tomorrow, and the day after that, and then it'll be open every Sunday after that. Once again, the web address for more information is tortmuseum.org. Ralph, it's always terrific to speak to you. What you've done for your hometown in Winsted and what you've done for the American public through, I can't count the years of tireless advocacy for the public is amazing. And we just hope you can keep up the good work and spreading the word.
Well, you know, people can get my column, weekly column. Just go to Nader.org, sign up. You'll get it automatically. We have a podcast called the Ralph Nader Radio Hour every week. All kinds of wonderful interviews and people who get things done for a better country and world and people who write books that aren't reviewed in the New York Times. And we give these authors a wide berth to talk about what they've uncovered. And we get questions from the audience. It's on Bridgeport Community Radio, so anybody can listen to that Sunday at 6 p.m. And then finally, there's a 12-minute video in the Tort Museum, so you could sort of get a one-hour course in tort law. Now, you know, I'm not saying you can pass a tort law test in law school, but you certainly will find out the basic principles of justice. You don't need to be a lawyer in order to understand them.
Well, once again, Ralph, thank you for spending a few minutes with us today.
Thank you very much, Marshall. Good luck.